People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking down real life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down real life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you are walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, that's more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more news for our people and interesting material all around. Here's an interesting item from Karen Smith, and certainly a sign of good health, at least in some quarters. And this is about a mayor who did not want to go along with something that is has become something of a phenomenon. So just I've become aware of it only in the last 6 months. Perhaps I wasn't paying close attention, but as a bit of a news junkie, I think I was. Somehow, this is yet another perverse phenomenon that's spread, and that is children being taken to libraries for people to read stories to them. Well, you know, on the surface that seems healthy enough. It's a good thing to encourage children to read to them, to get used to that. Oh, but that's not what's happening, unfortunately. They're being read to by freaks who are transgendered. Here's a picture. Paul Kane left as a kindergarten teacher and a drag queen. Either transgendered or drag queens. And, drag queens, for those not up on the latest sexual deviancy, are men who usually they are heterosexual men who like to dress up, you know, complete with makeup as women. In this case, this huge freak Paul Kane, complete with beard and hairy chest, has an orange fright wig on, what looks like a flowery balloon dress. Mayor tries to stop drag story hour. Why would you have transgender people talking to kids? And it identified in the picture, cross-dressing drag queens, story hour. Drag queen story hour is indoctrination. Jeff Scott, LGBT, Nevada Public Libraries. Rob Smith, Sparks Transgenderism, and at the Washoe County Public Library. And this is from Sparks, Nevada. The mayor of a town in Nevada is speaking out against the local library's decision to host a drag queen story hour event, detailing his unsuccessful efforts to block the event. When Sparks Mayor Ron Smith caught wind that Washoe County Public Library would be hosting one of the events, in which adult cross-dressers read to children between the ages of 3 and 8 and hold question and answer sessions and pose for photos, he was outraged, according to the Reno Gazette Journal. And rightly so. Quote, "It doesn't make any sense to me," he said. "It's absolutely ridiculous. Why would you have transgendered people talking to kids?" Smith said he was concerned about the report of how drag queens had conducted themselves in similar events across the country, and insufficient background checks leading to children being placed near convicted sex offenders. Recently, an Oregon library deleted pictures of children lying on top of a drag queen. So Smith contacted Washoe County Library Director Jeff Scott and County Commissioner Vaughn Hartung in hopes of canceling the event, but they told me there's nothing they can do. Quote, "It's a story time like any other story time," Scott claimed in response. "It's ridiculous and offensive to the LGBTQ community to say that anyone is going to molest children." Not necessarily saying anybody is going to molest children, but what type of person, I ask you, what type of person would want to dress up in drag and have be close to young children? I mean, it's not a big leap of faith here. The Nevada Family Alliance disagrees. Do you think that it's appropriate for county tax dollars to be spent on a so-called program that exposes kids to such a provocative lifestyle? The group asked, noting that the event dovetails with the library's support for the broader LGBT, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender agenda. This story is to complement the library participating in the Reno Gay Pride Parade with their cart drill team. So it sounds as though that the library is another daisy nest. The San Francisco-based Drag Queen Story Hour describes its express purpose as capturing, quote, "the imagination and play of the gender fluidity of childhood and giving children, quote, unabashedly queer role models." While Louisiana drag queen Dylan Pontiff admits the events are the grooming of the next generation. That's right. It's recruitment, stupid. So it's not a harmless reading stories to kids. Fair enough, if that's all it were, I don't have a problem with it. But it's not about that. It's about working on an ideology, the gender fluidity of childhood. I don't think that's true, actually. Even children very quickly identify themselves, I'm a little boy, I'm a little girl. Despite the mayor's efforts, the event took place on July 20th and drew hundreds of attendees, radio station KOLO reported. While many framed the event positively, some members of the community expressed concern. "That sends chills up my spine. I don't believe that should be what we are subjecting our kids to," Loy Mack said. A more liberal parent, Nicole Lander, said she brought her daughter to see the drag queens because she was kind of at an impressionable age. In my opinion, that's abusing, sexually abusing the kids. Here's an interesting event, and you know, the more people that get censored by these people, I have suddenly lost the story. By Google and others, the more we're going to have pushback. Now, this happens to deal with Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who is one of those seeking, well, I think it's 20 now plus, who are seeking the Democratic nomination for president. She's a congresswoman from Hawaii. This story is dated the 26th. Tulsi Gabbard sues Google for suspending her ads after the first Democratic debate. I wonder what that's about. While most of the voices accusing tech giants of political discrimination are conservative, some left and center figures are being caught up in the controversy as well, including 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard, a congresswoman from Hawaii, announced Thursday that she's suing Google for suspending her Google ad account for several hours after the first Democratic primary. And that, of course, would be, as she did quite well in that, I'm told, I didn't see it. That would be a crucial time for fundraising, or when people are excited or into you, for instance, something they've seen you do, they're more likely to shoot you off some money. The New York Times reported that following the debate, Gabbard was briefly the most searched presidential candidate on Google, and the campaign wanted to seize that moment with some ad buys, but found their account suspended. Quote, for hours, Tulsi's campaign advertising account remained offline while Americans everywhere were searching for information about her, Tulsi, the Gabbard campaign charged. During this time, Google obfuscated and dissembled with a series of inconsistent and incoherent reasons for its actions. In the end, Google never explained to us why why Tulsi's account was suspended. The campaign gave the Times emails indicating that Google initially suspended them for problems with billing information or violations of our advertising policies, well, whatever those are. Then sent a notice several hours later reinstating the account and claiming the temporary suspension was meant to verify billing information and compliance with Google's policy. Well, why would you suspend them? Check it out first, and then if there's a problem, I guess suspend. But that is increasingly typical of the punish first, ask questions later approach. Google spokesman Jose Castaneda told the Times that the company's automated systems, which are designed to catch unusual activities such as large spending changes, triggered a suspension, but the account was reinstated shortly thereafter. Quote, Google's discriminatory actions against my campaign are reflective of how dangerous their complete dominance over internet search is, and how the increasing dominance of big tech companies over our public discourse threatens our core American values, Gabbard declared in a statement. This is a threat to free speech, fair elections, and our democracy, and I intend to fight back on behalf of all Americans. The lawsuit seeks an injunction against Google engaging in further election interference, and a minimum $50 million in damages. It also alleges that her campaign email found their way into Gmail spam folders at a disproportionately high rate compared with those of other Democratic campaigns. Gabbard has drawn some interest for ostensibly being more moderate than the rest of the Democratic field. As recently as 2004, she opposed same-sex marriage, but is now a doctrinaire liberal on abortion, LGBT issues, and even decriminalizing prostitution. Since the 2017 election of President Donald Trump, Google has been under fire for allegedly intensifying efforts to slant their platforms and services in favor of Trump's opponents and other left-wing causes in a variety of ways, including blacklists, biased algorithms, and more. Concerns are being raised that figures within Google and other tech companies have been subverted by foreign governments. Federal Communications Commissioner Chairman Ajit Pai told Congress last month he considers unregulated Silicon Valley tech giants today's greatest threat to free and open internet. Earlier this month, Trump announced that he was directing my administration to explore all regulatory and legislative solutions to tech censorship. Representative Josh Hawley, a Republican from Missouri, has proposed legislation that would require social media platforms to certify their political neutrality with the FCC if they want to keep their congressionally granted immunity from legal liability for what they allow users to post. This is what I have been urging for at least the last 6 months. How do we deal with the censorship and blatant left-wing bias of much of big tech, Facebook, Twitter, PayPal, YouTube. How do we deal with that? Well, there are several ways. One, encourage and support alternatives like Gab. Gab is an alternative to Facebook. DuckDuckGo is an alternative to Google, and so on. And encourage movement, tech-savvy people to develop alternatives. That's one. But in the meantime, call on government to compel the beaks, compel the tech giants to not discriminate people against people because of their ideology or their religion. And that can be done by designating, one way to it can be done is to designate them as public utilities, which means that they, just like your telephone company or your electrical provider, a provider of electricity in your area, or a provider of natural heating, or heating oil, natural gas, or oil, as the case might be, it cannot say, "Well, we won't provide to you because you're a conservative, or you're a Christian, or you're a pagan." They can't. They cannot discriminate on the basis of belief. They, as long as you can pay your bill, they've got to provide for you. Well, similarly, with outfits like Google and PayPal and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and most of these make their money from advertising. So they provide a service, so-called, to you for free. And what they get out of it is basically you're their raw material that they sell to other interests for big money for advertising. Well, fair enough. But they should not discriminate. And I'm really glad to see that there are some concrete measures being taken which people ought to support. If you're an American, I strongly urge you to contact the FCC chairman, who seems favorable, Ajit, A-J-I-T, Pai, P-A-I, or Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, that's J-O-S-H, Hawley, H-A-W-L-E-Y, whose proposed legislation that would require social media platforms to certify their political neutrality. This is the time to use your voice to jump in there. Complain about it. Complaints are good, of course, but more is actually necessary. Another great column from the columnist for the National Post, and his name is Rex Murphy, and this is all about this freak, Jonathan Yaniv, has a penis, born a man, who now imagines he's a woman, now calling herself Jessica Yaniv, and this is the freak who has filed complaints before the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal against aestheticians, or sometimes they're called beauticians. His complaints deal with his efforts, and I think these were setup jobs. He called about 20 of these people and asked if they would do a Brazilian wax. Now that's the removal, it's done on women, it's the removal of hair, pubic hair, usually so they can wear very brief bikinis. Okay. And then he added the little bit of a kicker. I'm a woman, I'm transitioning, I have a penis and testicles. Well, of the 20 or so, three said, okay, yeah, come on over. But he did, apparently. Because I don't think these questions were in good faith. Of the other 17, he took them to the, complained against them to the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal. At least one settled with him for $2,500. I call that a shakedown. The others are now in various stages of their complaints being heard by the BC Human Rights Tribunal. And fortunately, I've got to say this, this issue, while it has not gotten a lot of attention in Canada, and Rex Murphy will talk about this, due to the outrageously complicit nature of much of the Canadian media, the LGBT crowd can do no wrong. These are the same media that year after year cover up the outrages at gay pride parades. Outrages where there is full frontal nudity on the part of a significant number of participants. Bill Watgott has been very good at taking photographs of that at the gay pride parade in Toronto in 2016, of men who had nothing on except their sandals and like a sort of a harness strap. So their genitals, so their penises were dangling down there for all to see and so on. On a personal basis, don't have problems with nudity. This may shock some people on a public beach. On a beach. I do have problems on a public street. And I think if a heterosexual couple were to walk down Yonge Street in Toronto or Main Street in Hamilton or Main Street in any American city butt naked, there'd be problems. And rightly so. I further believe that taking children to these gay pride parades is the equivalent of child abuse. And I make the comparison. You could not take a child to a strip club. I don't particularly have a problem with adults going to a strip club where women remove their clothes and dance. May not be my cup of tea for entertainment, but we as a society rightly say that whatever it may be that consenting adults can see is not proper for children. So the law, there's no state or province in North America where it would be possible for a parent to bring a six-year-old into a strip club or to another place that had adult entertainment. Just not allowed. Well, why would it be, should it be legally possible to bring your child to a gay pride parade? Well, anyway, where there is such nudity. Anyway, the point being that the media, most of it, covers this up. In fact, they do disingenuous propaganda work for these parades. In Toronto, the media will almost always say, and they have for a decade, 1 million people gathered. Well, actually, when 2 million people, supposedly, and I doubt it was quite that many, but when 2 million people came out for a big celebration because the Toronto Raptors had beaten the Los Angeles, whatever they are, basketball team to win the basketball championship. Apparently 2 million people gathered in downtown Toronto. There was complete traffic gridlock, jams, and so on for hours and hours and hours. And my point is that there's nothing like that at the Gay Pride Parade. And yet for at least a decade, the Toronto media has faithfully reported that a million people gathered for this wonderful family affair with grandparents and parents and young children cheering on the various weirdos and so on. It's outright a lie. A friend of mine who actually lives in Gay Town, downtown, in the Gay Village, this person's not homosexual, anything else. But in her younger days, she was quite heterosexually dynamic and so on, if you know what I mean. But anyway, she had the advantage of being in Paris during the huge student protests in 1968 that very nearly brought down the government. And so she has an idea of what a million people looks like in the streets. And she says, I've seen it, and this is not it. Anyway. The role of the media, disgraceful. And this story would probably not have had much traction at all in Canada, unfortunately, outraged that it is, if it had not been that it's being picked up by the foreign media. And this story of our disgrace has shot around the globe. And this begins as a bit of a complicated joke by Rex Murphy. A friend of mine recently went to his local garage, claimed he was a reconditioned 79 Chevy Nova, and asked them to do a timing check on the carburetor and rotate his tires. They said that they wouldn't because they didn't have a carburetor or tires, and they only worked on cars. He's off now to the local human rights tribunal after a stop for spare parts of the Canadian Tire. And actually, Rex Murphy comes up with I'll get to that in a minute, an amazing solution to this whole thing. The strange, ominous, and creepy case before the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal is reverberating around the world. This is the case of the person variously identified on the internet as Jonathan or Jessica Yaniv, who has mounted a campaign to force unwilling cosmeticians to do a Brazilian wax on their still very present testicles and penis. Present testicle and penis. Yaniv has filed complaints against them all. As I wrote last week, these are all women, some immigrants, and on the economic and cultural margins, 16 in total, according to most accounts. At least one, originally from Brazil, has had to close her small business. All have been under intense duress, and the vexatious complainant is notably hostile to immigrants. Social media posts by Yaniv, then identified as Jonathan, are remarkably insulting to newcomers to Canada. Some have paid Yaniv $2,500 to lay off, while others equipped themselves with lawyers at their own expense and have had their complaints dropped. But some have proceeded. These beauticians have been persecuted by this freak. Some have been successfully shaken down for money. Others, once a lawyer showed up on their behalf, the cases have dropped, but others are proceeding. All of them have been unfairly attacked and traumatized. And that's because the system allows this, or apparently does. Rex Murphy goes on to say, it's a very disturbing case, and for more reasons than the harassment of these women. It raises questions not only about the Human Rights Tribunal, but about many of the main organs of Canadian journalism. The latter issue first. The Times of London has a story on it. A popular Irish radio show talked to Yaniv, angry about the questions. Yaniv hung up, but only after telling the host she was capable of getting pregnant. but that is yet of clay you need to get pregnant. With a testicle, with testicles and a penis. I don't think you have to have been paid too much attention in high school biology to wonder whether that's possible. A far continent away, the Australian, the major newspaper there, gives a full account of the story. Hundreds of other serious and widely followed news sites and blogs in Canada, the U.S., and abroad have done the same. This is not a local story. And when Tweetmaster Ricky Gervais fired off this projectile of compressed lucidity, the matter had the Twitter equivalent of an Apollo liftoff. Quote, and this is what Ricky Gervais said. And it, you know, the solution is so simple. It's a woman's right to say, I don't wax testicles on a man or a woman. End of discussion. No sexism, no homophobia, no transphobia. The world is listening to this squalid tale, Rex Murphy says. And yeah, but there's a simple answer. And one would hope if common sense prevails at the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal, and that is a distant hope, believe me. But if it does, these women could very easily be questioned as to would you wax testicles and a penis? And if they said no, would it make any difference if the person carrying such equipment was a man? They'd say no, I wouldn't do it. And presumably, well, if the person carrying such equipment claim to be a woman, would you do it? And they could say no. So in other words, no discrimination. We just don't do it. That would be common sense. Whether or not that will be the final judgment remains to be seen. And Rex Murphy goes on to say, from my perspective, the core of the story is not Yaniv, whom, from what I've read, represents an opportunistic, cruel, and delusionally self-entitled who presents as opportunistic, cruel, and delusionally self-entitled, who manipulates the ever-changing fixations of identity and sexual politics for A, notoriety, or B, possible gain, and C, some delight in pushing and insulting hard-up people, especially Asians and newcomers, as a very questionable personal form of amusement. Where is the yarn outside of the National Post and the Toronto Sun in the large media of this country? CTV, that's one of our major networks. CBC, that's the Communist Broadcasting Corporation. That's our state-funded television and radio network. The Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, silence. The post-millennial has discovered the story, as has Blair White, herself a transgendered woman. She posted her work on YouTube. Perhaps the TV networks have an excuse. After all, you cannot expect to have a full 7 hours live of the comatose Mueller hearings and cover the Trump presidency every 15 minutes and still serve up a story of harassment of immigrants and very strange and creepy behavior out of Vancouver. Were Trump to tweet on the matter, of course, the panels would be endless, or righteous outrage infinite. Yeah, the fixation of the American media particularly, but also the Canadian media, with the irrelevant, largely irrelevant Mueller hearings, and with endlessly bashing and defaming Donald Trump. They just don't have room for anything else. Is it not Canadian news that the BC Human Rights Tribunal is giving this apparently aggressive and eagerly litigious person such specialized and respectful attention? At the same time as 16 women are going through what must be to them a frightening, perplexing, and tormenting legal grinder? Why are the Canadian media not at least reporting on what they are going through? Is it simply because even the word transgender is kryptonite to the brave media who are always otherwise anxious to write and broadcast so-called truth to power? The silent passing over of this story is journalistic cowardice, the fear of offending the passing pieties of the militant progressivism. As of the tribunal, it is simply enough, see mocking epitaph above, for someone to walk into its offices, self-declare, I'm a trans woman and I can't get my scrotum waxed, and have them take on the case? Is that truly all it takes? Did the tribunal's members think maybe if 16 women unanimously turned Yaniv down, the problem was more likely with the would-be customer, not the provider? Did they consider the upheaval in their lives as solemnly as they presided over this transparently noxious, trivial, illogical, and indulgent complaint? And you know, the fact that under human rights legislation, aggrieved minorities can make complaints, and even if they are frivolous, and even if they fail, the victims get nothing. The people complained against, whether rich or poor, who've had to go to regular expense, to say nothing about torment, worry, fear. They do all the suffering that's being inflicted on them, and should the complaint fail, they get no recompense. That's not fair. But then, that's the tyranny of human rights tribunals. Rex Murphy goes on to say, in my column last week, I lamented the tribunal's lack of common sense. This week I asked, where's their sense of human sympathy, compassion for the newcomer, and to this use of their most beloved terms for the marginalized? The woman from Brazil has lost her income while Yaniv enjoys the publicity. This is the woman who basically shut down her business, gave up in a panic. People do not choose to wax other people's genitals for love of the craft. They are poor. They likely want to provide for their children, so those children will never have to face the unpalatable choice of tending to other people's privates, male or female privates. These selfless people who condescend to this work are properly considered moral heroes. Parents do what all great parents have done, work for the good of their children. But now they are defendants in a Canadian court accused of being transphobic bigots. Of Yaniv's other alleged activities, I will not disturb your stomachs with full account. But if you can combine a fixation on tampons and very young girls, texting young girls with child pornography pictures, proposing all nude swims for 12-year-olds, and you can easily compose it for yourself. There are people who might actually need the protection of a human rights tribunal, but not the bullying and troubled being who wants their privates barbered under force of law. Canada is a laughingstock in half the world over this cruel and transparent farce. And I give Rex Murphy a lot of credit for his several columns. This is a full-length opinion column, two weekends running on the issue. This has to be exposed. And I mean, more than that, the human rights gangsters have got to be exposed. They're not for human rights. Everything but. Here's an interesting opinion from Irfan Yar, a counterterrorism and foreign affairs analyst, and he's a research intern at the McDonnell Laurier Institute in Vancouver. It has to do with Red China's ongoing bullying of Canada, primarily to try to force us to free Meng Wanzhou, Meng Wanzhou is the daughter of the founder of the huge Red Chinese tech company, Huawei. And their technology is widely believed to have a backdoor entry into it for their pals in the Red Chinese government to be able to spy on people. It's a security threat. Anyway, that's not why Meng Wanzhou was apprehended in Canada. There was an American request to have her extradited, if she came within our power, to the United States to face various charges. Anyway, when she was apprehended on a flight into Canada last December, all hell broke loose. The Red Chinese demanded her immediate release. Canada said, well, we have to go along with the law. She will get a hearing, an extradition hearing, which has been ongoing. And in the meantime, she'll be in jail. Well, she wasn't in jail very long. She's well connected, the Canadian system is weak. So she's out on bail and an elaborate monitoring system. She has security guards who keep an eye on her so she doesn't get to flee the country. But meanwhile, she can shop and waltz around at her several multi-million dollar homes in Vancouver. In the meantime, the Red Chinese have kidnapped two Canadians claiming they're in China on espionage. One of them was a former Canadian diplomat. In the meantime, two Canadians on drug charges in Red China who'd previously been sentenced to jail time have had their sentences up to execution. Red China has interfered with the legitimate export of Canadian canola and other products. It's all bullying and harassment, and all the Trudeau government has done is, well, basically done very little, except to hope that maybe Donald Trump can save their bacon. But there are things we can do. Particularly, Red China is very sensitive to its, or very insistent on its claim that there's only one China, and Taiwan is a renegade province thereof. Canada and the United States in 1970 meekly went along with this when they recognized, when they dropped their recognition of Taiwan. Well, that's Taiwan. Meanwhile, is an economic powerhouse. It's a democratic country. We should be moving closer to it. Anyway, that's what columnist of the Golden Mail, John Iveson, said. And what Irfan Yar is going to second. Iveson is right on Taiwan. Amid frosty Canada-China relations, political columnist John Iveson has rightly argued that Taiwan represents a good way for Canada to apply leverage in this dispute with Red China. Red China has detained two Canadians and banned various Canadian agricultural products under the pretext of health. Yeah, one of the biggest polluting nations in the world, making a stand on health. Clearly, this is China's retaliation for the arrest of Huawei chief financial officer Meng Wanzhou. As Iveson writes, it is time for Canada to engage with Taiwan, both as leverage against China and to create a win-win scenario for Canada and Taiwan. The Taiwanese president Tsai's recent trip to U.S. resulting in a $2.2 million arms deal with the U.S. underlined the importance of this island nation to the West. Unfortunately, in an effort to appease China, Canada maintains a restrictive interpretation of its One China policy. Even though Ottawa has never accepted China's position on the matter, choosing only to take note of Peking's position. Finally, falsely claimed by Peking as part of Chinese territory, Taiwan is a sensitive issue for the People's Republic. China blocks the self-ruled island from participating in most multilateral forums and threatens countries that voice support for Taiwan. Maybe this would be the time for us to do that. That of course, is my opinion, not necessarily Mr. Yars, but he continues. and meanwhile, Taiwan is actively seeking to expand its formal engagement and economic ties with Canada. Thus, it would be pragmatic for Ottawa to endorse Taiwan's membership in the comprehensive and progressive agreement for a Trans-Pacific Partnership and sign a foreign investment promotion and protection agreement. Such partnerships will help Canada diversify its exports, reducing dependence on Red China, while signaling Canada's resolve in the current diplomatic crisis. Also, Taiwan has played a significant role in the domain of civil aviation. Taiwan, for example, hosted 1.6 million flights in 2017. 1.6 million, that's a lot of flying. Canada should support Taiwan's participation in the upcoming 40th General Assembly of the International Civil Aviation Organization in Montreal. Furthermore, to increase formal recognition, engagement with Taiwan, the government should be willing to invite high-level Taiwanese officials to Ottawa and send cabinet ministers to Taipei. In our dealings with China, Canada has been largely reactive and indeed naive. Engaging with Taiwan will show that Canada can take a principled stand to support a real partner while demonstrating to Peking that we won't be pushed around. I agree with that. We should be putting Canada first. An increased trade with Taiwan is a win-win situation. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. Going to take my musical break. Now I'm going to play a kind of a bit of a bad boy. This is George Jones, known as the Possum, the late George Jones, known for many things, including some really great duets, including with the woman who would be his wife for a while, and that was Tammy Wynette. And hope you like it. Some George Jones, some songs from the Possum. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
I feel tears welling up, calling deep inside, like my heart's sprung a big break. And the stab of loneliness, sharp and painful, that I may never shake. You might say that I was taking it hard since you broke me off with a call. But don't you wager that I'll hide the sorrow when I'm a red right down in ball. Now the race is on, and here comes pride at the back stretch. Heartaches are going to the inside. My tears are holding back. They're trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. True love stretched for another's sake. The race is on, and it looks like heartaches. And the weather loses all. In love, never once suspecting what the final result would be. How I lived in fear of waking up each morning and finding that you're gone from me. There's aching and pain in my heart, for the day was the one that I headed to face. Somebody new came up to win her, and I came out in second place. Now the race is on, and here comes pride at the back steps. Heartaches are going to the inside. Trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. True love scratched for another's sake. The race is on, and it looks like heartaches. And the winner loses all.
Part of running ground.
aching, breaking heart of mine is crazy over you. And I'm afraid to let you know I love you like I do. Or if you knew how much I care, I know what you would do to drop me like the others and go find somebody new. Last night I saw you, darling, in the arms of someone new. And I know that you don't love him, you just want to make me blue. I guess you think that hurting me will make me love you more. But someday from you, darling, this old heart will lock its door. acting more with dynamite. Thought I was your destiny, but just before you got to me, your heart turned left and I was on the right. I almost had the battle won. What could I have said and done to put you in another's arms tonight? I don't know where I lost out. I just know without a doubt, your heart turned left and I was on the right. Your heart turned left and I was on the right. You couldn't have hurt me more than dynamite. But I was your destiny. But just before you got to me, your heart turned left and I was on the right. Poor heart just moans and groans. I walk around just kicking stones. Oh, keep me cheer, won't get another bite. Funny why you lead me on. About the morning you were gone, your heart turned left and I was on the right. Your heart turned left and I was on the right. You couldn't have hurt me more with dynamite. I was your destiny, but just before you got to me, your heart turned left and I was on the right. Yeah, your heart turned left and I was on the right. Your heart turned left and I was on the right.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. Now extend.